All right, this is James Kozlik, your host, and tonight I was on a trip with my wife, Marion. She's going to be our guest tonight. Actually, both of us are in this program. We had just gotten back from Hawaii, and I haven't had enough time to round up a guest for the night, a special guest, and I was trying to collaborate with a group, but that didn't work out. So we decided, we had such a wonderful time in Hawaii, and we really did come across some things that really affected our relationship, or we discovered. And if you've been following the program, last week we interviewed live from Hawaii. We interviewed Tom Catton, who was the mindful addict and author, and a 42-year person in recovery. Is that what you would say? Anyway, that was a really good interview. I would suggest when that gets put on the archive, hopefully in a week or two, it might be on there now, I would suggest viewing that program. It was a really good interview. And so tonight, why don't we get started, Marion?
Well, we thought that we could talk from experience because we're a couple of 41 years. And we had such a daunting realization. I'll say I did. I believe it's both of us.
Both of us.
When we spent 5 weeks in Hawaii together, living in a very tiny house. And we've raised 3 children and been through the ups and downs of a relationship and know each other well. We know each other as a couple longer than we know ourselves single or have been with ourselves single. So I find it fascinating that we came across so many challenges living in a tiny house, which was a sea container on our piece of property in Hawaii.
Yeah, that was an eye-opener. We were in a space 8-foot by 20-foot. Actually, it was deluxe camping is what I call it. We ended up with a cook stove, and it took us a while to finally fine-tune it. And the thing really didn't get fine-tuned until the last couple of days.
Right.
But we inched away at it. But in the meantime, we were not only holed up in this sea can, that's what we call it,
I like to call it a boxcar.
Boxcar.
Because I read the Boxcar Children series.
So anyway, we were holed up in there. And not only that, we had this rental car. So we did probably 98% of the things we did were together. So we were constantly with each other. And so there was a lot of times where we were sometimes at each other's throat is probably a nice way to put it. You know,
I believe the challenges really came forth due to more things than just the space.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that we know each other so well, we tend to project old things onto each other. Or I'll speak for myself. I noticed that I projected some things onto you that I almost expect to happen because they've happened in the past. And in a tiny place, you can't help but overlook. You can't overlook it. You just, no matter where you are inside, you can see what the other one's doing or have a sense of what they're doing.
Right. That's like having an alter ego.
Yeah.
Why are you doing, you know...
Right.
So that's interesting because I wrote in a little journal that I was keeping periodically. I'd write a little journal. And I wrote about this one day, about the sea can experience. And I remember, I think the one thing that I missed the most is we like to do check-ins when we check in, and we discussed this on a previous program with another couple, and that's also in the archives. And I think I really missed that because we really didn't pay attention to that as part of our routine. And I remember this one morning when I was going through my stories and my thoughts, and I was really getting negative because, and I think I mentioned, oh man, you know, I didn't feel like I was being treated right or with respect or whatever. And you asked me, what do you need? Let's check in. And I was still in my story, so I needed time to process. And you asked me, one of the things was, I started just throwing some emotions and stuff out there and feelings, but not really in tune with them. So Marion asked me, well, what do you need? Do you need some joy today? Do you remember that?
I do.
So we drove down to the beach, and I got to snorkel with turtles. And one part of our routine to get the nice weather would be to drive down to this beach, which was about 30 minutes away. And then we'd take our lunch and head up to the coffee plantation. They had all these picnic tables out, and we'd get out of the misty rain and have our lunch there. And when we finally got there, I was able to process what I was truly going through. And that's when I actually was able to admit to Marion that I was having a problem with feelings of self-worth, and that, you know, the ego just jumped in there of, you know, why is she keep constantly telling me to do something this way or that way, or asking, what am I doing this for? You know, all my little idiosyncrasies, so to speak. But I did get joy that day, and then we finally checked in, and I was actually finally able to go through this whole process of checking in, observing judgments, feelings, emotions, you know, needs that I had,
and totally changed, shifted your feelings, or shifted the position, disposition you had.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to also address, because you mentioned good weather, and one of the other big factors was that the very first 2 weeks we were in the winter of the tropics. It was raining every day.
Oh, it was coming in waves.
And the sea container being metal, you could hear the rain.
Oh.
And I slept well with the rain due to having poor hearing in one ear. I would just sleep on my
lucky
ear.
Lucky you.
Yeah, my hearing. The ear with the good hearing was down, and then I couldn't hear the rain so much. So,
and we were waiting for a day to put a lid on top of it. I put actually a little lean-to roof on top of it, so that you wouldn't hear the rain hitting direct on top of this sea can.
And it took almost a week.
Oh, because we're out in the middle of the ocean there, and I felt like we were on a sea barge in that sea can.
Literally, because there was so much rain that we ended up with a pond in our front yard.
Yeah, a swimming pool.
A swimming pool.
It was sweet. Didn't even have to dig a hole.
A wading pool, yeah. So even though we had fun around it, it offered challenges. And it came to me, too, right before the show, that another thing that was up was it was right during the lunar eclipse, which, for those of you out there that know that the moon energy definitely works on our emotions as the waves and the tide pulling in.
Which we witnessed.
We witnessed big time. Every time we went to the ocean, it was wild. It was wild. I wasn't brave enough to enter in to snorkel.
Later,
until it calmed down. And I think that lunar eclipse bringing up so much of what we need to see. I felt like the light was shining for me on everything I needed to work on personally for my personal growth, and especially in relationship to Jim. Hmm. To you, dear.
Yeah.
And
so, go ahead.
Between the rain and the solar or the lunar eclipse, and the fact that we were in a tiny space, those were three huge things that I saw that have made the challenges appear so great between us.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you, Jim, in retrospect, what would you have liked to do differently as we adjusted to living in the tiny space, tiny house?
Yeah. I think I would like to... I really missed it. I think the check-in every morning would have been a good... Not only the morning, but maybe even in the evening or whenever something came up, to just stop what we were doing and check in with each other and just let each other know what's going on. I think that was big. I think another thing that...
Well, could I interrupt you for a moment? While we're at this check-in, for those of you that aren't familiar with what check-in is exactly, it's a practice of being still and then checking in with oneself of what feelings are alive in you in the present moment, and if there's any needs that are coming up, and then from there a possible request of either yourself or the other person. So it would be just a 2 minute, 2, 3, maybe 5 minute check-in with ourselves, sharing with the other person, so that we both know what page we're on and what's alive in us.
Yeah, because I found it amazing the stories I would create about you, about us, about the whole nine yards after all these years, because we've been really good all these years checking in, but all of a sudden we get in this small space, and it was really something how it's like we... either forgot all about that, or we just, I don't know what took over. Maybe it was the roosters and the barking dogs and the cokies.
Well, not to mention that we're in a new environment, mm-hmm. in a totally new culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think just flying over the ocean, we expected something different. We spent about 10 or 14 days last year in Hawaii, and it was so idyllic.
Mm-hmm.
The weather was perfect.
Same
we were
time
camping
of
and
right.
moving, and we're outside most of the time.
Yeah.
No box around us.
Right.
Or around each other.
Yeah, we had a lot more
freedom, and mm-hmm. and we were very minimal. We were minimal this year, but we were extremely mm-hmm. minimal last
right.
year. And the freedom it allowed us, and the harmony.
Yeah.
I don't know that we ever had a... And so the contrast of last year between weather and the living conditions, and just exploring the island, and all those things made so different. And so that could be another thing. In fact, I can relate to that being a disappointment for me. The weather was so different, and the experience we were having was so different. And I want to return you back to, you were talking about your check-in and what you would have liked to do differently in retrospect.
I think the other thing that I would have liked done different is to spend a little more time. We were always like... Once we got the little lid over the thing, we had this little deck out there, and I think it would have been nice to spend a little time under the stars at night, sitting down and just connecting with each other, having a little heater by us if we needed it, because it would get pretty chilly at night with the humidity and the being the 50s. And so that would have been nice, too. I think I would have liked to have a little bit more of that time spent. seemed like we were always on the go to get the heck out of there and out of that sea can, and we go to the lodge, the volcano lodge at the, those people really got to know us, the workers there.
And sit cuddling by the fire.
Mm-hmm. So I think that would be another thing that I would have liked to have done a little different. But the check-in is huge. I think I something else I would have liked to have been done different would have been to be a little more mindful and aware. I had this whole thing in my head of what I wanted to get done because we do have some partners in on this deal, and so I was going to, you know, build this roof over the place and fix it up so it's all set for the next set of people. And so I think I was so focused on that a lot of times I was thinking about that, what to do next, and not even including you in on what I was doing or what I was thinking about. You know, it was like, okay, this is Jimmy's project, you know. And so I would have liked to have been a little more mindful and aware, you know, of more your input and done different. I would have done that a little different. You know, I wouldn't have been so focused on this one, I got to get this project done. And it's going to be done this way.
Is that something that you recognize in other areas of your...
Well, it's funny that
doing
you
projects.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I don't know. I could go way back to Wayne Dobek. I remember him coming up to me one time and saying he's looking at what I was doing, and it was a space that I was creating for both of us. And he says, "Well, I could tell that this is your project." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean by that?" "Well, I don't see any of Marion's ideas in here or what she might do."
I don't even remember
I'm
because not sure that I was ever aware of it.
You weren't aware of that, and that just came up now. That's old history. That goes back what, 30 years, something like that?
Yeah, 30
and years. 30 years ago, and it just came up now, and it is amazing like how much of that type of energy I still hold on to, even around the house here, you know. I'm usually the guy hanging pictures or doing this or shifting things around.
And then I come in and say, I'm not really wanting it to be that way. Yeah. In fact, our first place that we owned, it was a mobile home in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to work and Jim would, I would come home and almost every 2 weeks for the first, I don't know, it felt like almost every 2 weeks, he would rearrange the furniture, rearrange the drawers in the kitchen. It was like he was constantly trying to be so organized or so strategic.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally had to say, stop already. Stop changing everything, because I'm adjusting to being a newly married woman in a new home in a new state, and it was just way too much.
Yeah.
Too much change all at once and all and continually.
Yeah. So it's funny how that came up
now
after all of a sudden there was a whole new environment over there in Hawaii and in that little tiny house, that little sea can. So it's amazing how that all came back, you know.
And the truth of the matter is that you are a very creative person. And at the same time, I do like to be included.
Yeah, I don't mean to shut you out, you know. So it is that's that being self-aware how not only me but others around me experience life. That the experiential feeling, I take that away if I'm not mindful of including, being inclusive with people. So it's more than
because
just
I,
you. Yeah, it's probably.
I ended up just being out in our environment and looking at the plants and picking things that I knew were noxious, and which is pretty much my element, being in the earth.
So now what would you have done different?
Well, for me, I would have liked us to give each other a spinal flush. Hmm. And this is
might
something...
Might want to explain that.
Yeah. This is something Jim and I do rather regularly. It's especially good when we have a low resistance, but it's also very effective when there's...
That just got recorded.
It's also very effective when the energy does not feel comfortable or harmonious between two people. And so the spinal flush is energy medicine, and it's something Donna Eden teaches. Lisa Buford teaches it here in our vicinity, Bozeman, Livingston, Immigrant.
Is there a website or something you can recall?
You could Google Donna Eden.
E-D-E-N?
I believe so, E-D-E-N. And just even put in spinal flush, and I imagine something would come up.
Probably on YouTube, too.
Yeah, very possibility. So anyway, it's basically where you run down each other's spine, doing little circles on each side of the spine to release, basically you're releasing toxins. Mm-hmm. And sometimes because the toxins collect at the spine, it creates a toxic environment which gets our thoughts muddied up and our energy muddied up. And so if you're clearing that, then it becomes more harmonious, because that's the way our bodies work with us.
Yeah.
And so having that in the forefront, having the idea of let's give each other a spinal flush. You could be standing up. We sometimes do it on our massage table here at home, but you could stand up and lean against, you know, have your hands up against the wall, and the other person is just working your spine down from the very neck down to the tailbone. Two times actually will do it. Three times if you haven't felt a shift in your energy.
That's the clincher.
And, yeah. And the beauty is that even though there's maybe a negative or some hard feelings going on between you, you do not give your partner any negative energy giving a spinal flush. That's the one thing you can do in touch that won't pass on negative energy.
Well, and that's interesting that you mentioned that, because really, even if there's negative energy and you take the time to connect with physical touch like that,
yeah,
it really does dissipate.
You dissolve the negativity so mm-hmm. quickly. So
Unless you go for the throat.
Which a couple times I was ready to.
I know.
I'm sure you were too.
Yeah.
So I do regret that I did not think of that.
Okay.
So I'm glad that we're doing this show and that we're reliving our experience so that we could share it with all of you out there and to mark it in our beings
right. How
we can do things differently when it's not harmonious between us.
Yeah, it's pretty personal, but this is fun to do.
Yeah.
To share with people. I think the reason we like to share with people, not that we're any different than anybody else, but at least to show that there is some effort you have to put forth in a relationship to keep it going.
Yeah, 41 years is pretty much history these days.
Know, it's fight or flight, and what do you choose?
Yeah.
You know? So.
And it really does involve commitment.
Commitment, yeah.
And courage.
Yeah.
So I did also think of one other thing that we have done in the past that I didn't think of in Hawaii, and mm-hmm. is remember how sometimes we sit with a candle between us?
Oh, yeah.
We mm-hmm. sit quietly and have a candle between us, and we're making eye contact, and we're speaking only with our eyes.
Well, it's funny because you ended up buying a candle, but we still hadn't had a table set up with any chairs so we can sit in the middle of us, you know.
And so the thought never even occurred to us. I mean, we could have stood.
Yeah.
The last day
we finally built a table out of the wood scraps that were left.
Yeah.
So now it just needs some chairs.
Yeah. Well, so that's a very effective way to also come together, and because the eyes are the window to the soul, and mm-hmm. so when you're looking into your beloved's eyes, everything else kind of gets bypassed. I mean, in the past, we have seen flickers of emotions running through each other, facial expressions mm-hmm. as you're melting into a softer, more soulful connection mm-hmm. rather than the outer physical conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do regret that we didn't remember that.
That's quite romantic, too.
It is.
Yeah,
and it
really nice.
It takes care of it. And generally, it doesn't take but 5 to 7, 8 minutes before we feel soft enough to be able to speak, and our whole energy field has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And we are more introspective and can share honestly with each other what we would have liked to do differently or where we are now. And I think that makes a big difference.
Okay. You know, we'd spend a lot of time over at the lodge, especially those first 2 weeks. And it was pretty cool because they'd have a fireplace and a lot like Yellowstone Park or something like that, you know, but this was kind of neat. It was the national park. We'd go to the volcano lodge and we'd sit on these rockers in front of this fireplace. And we'd always meet people just about every night and morning that would come to warm up by the fire. And I'm wondering how you would describe the way you would approach males, for instance. You know, other men, because they were young, old, mm-hmm. middle-aged. And did you find it awkward at all, or is it just another person? Or
for me, and, you know, at my maturity level and having lived I'm comfortable with myself, and so it's not at all difficult for me to spark a conversation, and generally I can intuit whether someone is present and wanting to engage in conversation or not. And so there were times that I sat by the fire and someone would come up and we'd have a exchange of eye contact, but no words. Either I was not receptive at the time, I wasn't feeling social, or I didn't see any real warm connection in the eye contact, so I just thought, well, maybe they're in their own space and I'm certainly in my own space. So how would that be for you? I mean, and people in general, I mean, basically I didn't feel a difference between male and female for myself.
Mm-hmm. I looked at it at everybody just having a good time because they're all on vacation. And I don't know how to put my finger on it, but I feel like.
I think that.
Yeah, I think I know that I have some apprehension sometimes, because I might be looking, for instance, at a female, the opposite sex. I might be looking more at the physical attributes first, as opposed to the heart-to-heart connection. before I even have a heart-to-heart connection.
You're so honest, dude.
Well, it's true. And so it's pretty interesting because then that's where I really want to connect eye contact or, I wouldn't want to say a certain feature, but it would be more eye contact or at the lips when they're talking, but I like to be real mindful that I'm not, I get into more of a heartfelt conversation or just, I just like to make a connection, just, hey, you're here, I see you in this world having a good time and vice versa, Seems like most of the men I talk to, they're all about what they retired from, I used to work for the railroad, or I used to whatever, be a conservationist, and then, so we have a whole topic on that. Well, it's a little different, I think with the women, it was more like, more about what they were doing in the course of the day, or how they appreciate the volcano, or the weather, or whatever,
A little bit more in depth.
A little bit more, but nothing too deep,
Well, you brought to mind for me the difference of the way Hawaiian men approached me, and I found that they were very affectionate. A first encounter.
Yeah.
In a safe realm. I mean, they knew Jim was my husband because there would be Jim and I were together, and it was obvious we were married. The people that were affectionate knew that, and they hugged and kissed me on the first encounter, just with my learning my name. They leaned into me and gave me a warm hug and a kiss on the cheek, or a cheek to cheek. And I thought it was just very comforting and warm to me, and very honorable.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed that. And so you said you read something about the Hawaiian culture and the role of the man.
Well, I took a picture from one of a art picture that we saw. And if you remember, we went to this authentic hula at the cultural center, our cultural center in Volcano. And if you were paying attention, all of the males that were playing, and any male that's, yeah, and even with the Hawaiian, the one older guy that got up
and did the hula,
every time they came together, and even at the end, I experienced this as a beautiful tradition, that when they shake hands, they got this bro shake going on, and then they lean into each other, and they shoulder to shoulder, but for the Hawaiian man, they do forehead to forehead.
Almost like third eye to third eye.
Yep, third eye to third eye. We're doing it now. And what that means is that I pray for my brother, which I thought was pretty profound, especially being in this men's group, so that you have this brotherhood. And I had this, one of the guys that played there, he was learning traditional music. He was a younger guy, and the older guys that were playing, they were passing on the tradition to him. And I was going to interview him. That was supposed to be this interview, but it turned out that for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So I'm going to try to get Ty on here on the show to talk about the male Hawaiian male's role in the Hawaiian culture. And have him also play some tunes.
Yeah, because it was very inspiring to hear their music is so heartfelt. In fact, at the hula, Jim said a traditional, authentic hula, and the difference is there's the hula that's for entertainment, and then there's the hula that's traditional and is a form of worship and chanting, and that's what we went to. And so the each hand motion is saying something with your hands. It's almost like sign language. And the whole body's
But most of the action is from the waist up versus the waist down.
That's for the older, because we saw some older women and men doing the hula. When they're older, that's from the top, from the waist up, because there's more heart involved. And when they're younger, the youth are learning it, they have more mobility in their hips and it's more lower because they don't have the experience of life and they haven't experienced births and deaths and friendships and relationships. And
so there's a lot there with the wisdom in the upper plane, just kind of like the chakras, where as your chakras come up, you have more wisdom. So it was really, really good and authentic. So I'm hoping to get an interview with Ty and learn a little bit more about the men's in Hawaiian culture. And since this is the Men's Radio Network on KGVM, 95.9 on your dial. So what else have we got? What can we cover? That was one of my questions I was going to ask you. How do you feel when a male gives you affection? So obviously the Hawaiian culture was, you weren't expecting that, were you? You didn't know nothing about it.
And I didn't experience it last year because we didn't really get to know a whole lot of Hawaiians. This year, when we stayed in Volcano in our neighborhood, we were able to get to know some of our neighbors. And that familiarness or the closeness and proximity must have been the reason they were immediately affectionate. I'm not quite certain, although I enjoyed it.
I've always had this sense, like even the first time we went there, your knee was whacked out, a meniscus going on. And I remember pulling into that 7-Eleven over there in Curtistown, and this beautiful young man saw Marion struggling to get out on her side of the car, and before I can even come around and get her, he was there with this big smile and helping her get out and taking her leg and gently putting it on the ground. You remember that? And I'll never forget that, because it's like there's this look that I see in the Hawaiian males and how they interact with...
And certainly not all of them.
Right, but not all of them. But the ones that are really just have this beautiful aura about them show this respect towards elders, and I think that's part of their tradition. Yeah. But we need to find out more about that.
Well, I would say that that was truly my experience, that there was a respect for the elders.
Yeah, and how would you like a male to respect you as a female? You know, here we are back in the States, you know, and we have this male-female, and especially these days, there's, you know, with the Me Too movement and all that, there seems to be, and the feminist movement and blah, blah, blah. How do we overcome all these differences now, and how can a male better be mindful or aware or show respect towards a female these days?
I think it's pretty much coming from the true self, your authentic self, because if you're in your heart, I don't think a woman will be offended. And so I can't say that I feel very vulnerable around men. I just haven't in a long time had any kind of experience. Certainly when I was younger, I did. And, you know, now I have some skills and I have greater intuition maybe, so that if I feel uncomfortable around a male, I make sure I'm not going towards him. I'm keeping my distance.
So that's some stuff that a male can detect. But I like what you originally said about if you can sense a male being authentic and coming from their heart. And I think, you know, a lot of what we do in the men's group these days is getting in touch with those feelings and those heartfelt feelings and authentic self, trying to get to our developing our authentic self. So, and I think as we grow in regard to getting more in touch, men, male, and males, in touch with our self and our feeling and our true self, I think we might see better results with our connection with the opposite sex and with anybody, really.
Right, with all
anybody,
relationships.
Because we have to get to know who we are and be authentic with it before we can even
truly
show respect.
And I think it goes just, it's as equally important for women to be in their heart to be their authentic self. If they're feeling defensive or, you know, resentful of men, I believe that men pick up on that energy and maybe, you know, throw in some digs or become a little aggressive, or I don't know. It's, you know, there's almost a scent of aggression or resentment. You know, there's almost a bit of a toxic aroma around that I think can get the two parties spurring, even if it's not head-to-head or, you know, but maybe through words or looks or...
It reminds me of that movie with Al Pacino, The Scent of a Woman.
I don't even think I saw
it. I don't think you saw that. It was a late-night movie for me. It was a pretty good movie. He was blind and...
Well, just like when two people meet and there's an attraction, it's usually a scent. There is a scent, and mm-hmm. I remember a scent. I can't necessarily describe it, but I know that it was very pronounced and enjoyable, attractive, or so. I don't know. Were you aware of that? Do you have any remembrance of, in the five senses, we, you know, physically saw each other? And
well, you know, in terms of perfume or...
No, it wasn't anything like that. It's a human scent. It's
the human scent. The human...
No, it's no perfume or no essential oils or...
Yeah.
Or soap.
But it is. It is our human, whatever we give off, you know, our sweat, or...
Well, so I was asking you, do you have a remembrance of being aware of that?
Boy. And I brag about long-term memory versus short-term memory. I'm sure I did.
I'm sure you did, too.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's subtle, and so, you know, it's unless you're really being present, tuned into your senses, you could miss it.
I could miss it. And, well, again, it's all being mindful and aware on more of a constant basis. And I'll admit I'm not always there.
No, I'll admit I'm not always there either. I don't think our challenges in Hawaii would have been so accentuated if we were. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to mention. Another thing that just occurred to me was that the whole idea of being in a tiny, tiny house together.
Yeah.
It's not like we never were, because when we were...
Colorado days.
Yeah, in Westcliff, we lived in a milk truck.
Yeah, for a while, and then went to the little
winter
dome.
And then had a son at the, you know, right. There were three of us. So I think another factor was that we were really looking at, for me, it's like I feel like I've evolved, and I was thinking that, oh, that's all in the past. All those learned behaviors that I learned in my family of control issues or the constant monitoring what someone else is doing, which women tend to do well anyway. And I don't know, it seemed like in my family that was very accentuated. And so I believe that the small space also concentrated those learned behaviors and made me aware of the fact that I still have it.
You still got it.
Yep. I'm human as can be, and I'm not as evolved as I would have liked to be.
Well, and I think that was the big challenge that we recognized, both of us have recognized, like, oh my God, you know,
we're going back to this stuff.
Yeah, we're going way back. It's like, holy God, they never really. Well, even in the interview with Tom, when I did that interview with Tom, it was amazing because here's a guy that's been meditating for 50 years, and it is amazing because we, in that interview, you know, he recognized, he says, because he did, before we started, we did a, he did the singing bowls, Tibetan singing bowls, and as a therapy, and he had both of us laid down, and he did this whole therapy with us, and so I was sharing with him how I was going through all these thoughts while he's doing it at the start, and then finally, near the end, boom, I was out, and then I was plastered to the floor, and I couldn't get up. Well, in the midst of our interview, we were talking about that, and I said, but so, Tom, you know, how do you meditate? But I know, you know, sometimes I'll think I'll be meditating, and I'm having all these thoughts going through my head that I got to get rid of before I finally get to a nice space. And he says, yeah, I've been meditating for 50 years, and I'm still, you know, going through the same thing, but it's always coming back to the breath. Coming back to the breath and taking a couple of nice deep breaths, you know, and getting you, because that brings you back into that present moment. So it's amazing if we would have taken the time as we were coming across all these old patterns, you know, old thoughts from way back when, to remind each other maybe, or just personally, remember to come back to that breath and get in, be in the present moment.
Well, we started our days that way, and so the beginning of the days tended to be smoother than as the day cranked on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we got involved, and we just, I think, sometimes lost our center.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to agree.
So I did want to bring up about that having thoughts during meditation or even isn't necessarily a
bad thing.
Yeah, it's not an obstruction. You just kind of watch them like you watch the clouds,
right,
or watch your breath.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that thought.
Look at
that.
Oh,
I haven't thought of that person in a long time.
Fly by.
Yeah.
All right, so you got anything else you think you might want to cover?
Well, actually, I want to thank you, Jim, for giving us the opportunity to work out and clear some of our emotional static, I'd like to say, that we came across in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Now that we're in Montana.
Sharing it with who's ever listening out there.
Yeah.
KGVM 95.9 on your dial.
And I would like to say that for all of you in relationship, whether it's marriage or partners or roommates, friends, family, whoever is in your immediate environment, to know that even I think that it's a very natural process to have to cleanse and go through things and be mindful that it's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's actually a gift. And Jim and I often try to remind each other when we have a difficult message that we're hearing from one another, we often say, thank you for the gift. Mm-hmm. And that helps to lighten how we're experiencing the difficult-to-hear message. It alerts the other person that, okay, I am mm-hmm. going to try to find the gift in this.
Yeah, yeah. That's really good.
That was something that Matt Kahn shared with us.
Right. Well, for me, feel finished? For me, as we wind down here, I'm feeling ready to get back into the men's group. And there is a connection there, this brotherhood. I want to bring back this feeling of brotherhood that I experienced observing the Hawaiian culture. I'm so grateful. I want to send out this gratitude energy towards the Big Island and all those people that we connected with out there. We had so much fun. We met so many people, other people that were retiring, Hawaiians, you know, just across the board. And it was a real aloha
really
experience
is.
Over there. In fact, I've got a sticker on my truck that I've had for over 10 years, Big Island Love. And I think that I really did experience that, and I hope I can bring it back and touch other people with it as I reconnect with
all our Montana friends and family.
And family and connections that we make here. So that's where I would like to end.
Okay.
So I love you, dear. Thank you for being part of this adventure and sharing it. I want to thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Means a lot. And
thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome.
And thank you all
for
all
listening.
Our listenings.
Yeah. All right. Take care. We'll be back. I'm hoping to get some different interviews going here and get back in the swing of things. I'd like to get this Ty John from Hawaii, see if I can corral him in to do an interview. And then I want to get some more men, maybe men from the men's group or a different men's group, to get a little bit deeper in depth. We've had various men tell about how it's impacted their lives being in men's groups right now. But I'd like to get a little deeper and hopefully have some shows with that type of connection going forward. So stay tuned. And happy Valentine's Day. Don't forget about your loved one if you have a mate.
Or
if you don't.
There's always a lot of love to give.
There's a lot of love to give. So aloha.